Chapter 2. Study the geology and beautiful natural features of the country round. The lady whose appearance had asserted a difference between herself and the Angleberry people, without too clearly showing what that difference was, passed out of the town in a few moments, and, following the highway across meadows fed by the Froome, she crossed the railway and soon got into a lonely heath. As he had been watching the base of a cloud as it closed down upon the line of a distant ridge, like an upper upon a lower eyelid, shutting in the gaze of the evening sun. She was about to return before dusk came on, when she heard a commotion in the air immediately behind and above her head. The saunterer looked up and saw a wild duck flying along with the greatest violence, just in its rear being another large bird, which a countryman would have pronounced to be one of the biggest duck hawks that he had ever beheld. The hawk neared its intended victim, and the duck screamed, and redoubled its efforts. Ethelberta impulsively started off in a rapid run that would have made a little dog bark with delight and run after, her object being, if possible, to see the end of this desperate struggle for a life so small and unheard of. Her stateliness went away, and it could be forgiven for not remaining, for her feet suddenly became as quick as fingers, and she raced along over the uneven ground with such force of tread that, being a woman slightly heavier than Gossamer, her patent heels punched little D's in the soil with unerring accuracy wherever it was bare, crippled the heather twigs where it was not, and sucked the swampy places with a sound of quick hisses. Her rate of advance was not to be compared with that of the two birds, though she went swiftly enough to keep them well in sight in such an open place as that around her, having at one point in the journey been so near that she could hear the whisk of the duck's feathers against the wind as it lifted and lowered its wings. When the bird seemed to be but a few yards from its enemy, she saw it strike downwards, and after a level flight of a quarter of a minute, vanish. The hawk swooped after, and Ethelberta now perceived a whitely shining oval of still water, looking amid the swarthy level of the heath like a hole through to a nether sky. Into this large pond, which the duck had been making towards from the beginning of its precipitate flight, it had dived out of sight. The excited and breathless runner was in a few moments close enough to see the disappointed hawk hovering and floating in the air, as if waiting for the reappearance of its prey, upon which grim pastime it was so intent, that by creeping along softly she was enabled to get very near the edge of the pool, and witness the conclusion of the episode. Whenever the duck was under the necessity of showing its head to breathe, the other bird would dart towards it, invariably too late, however, for the diver was far too experienced in the rough humor of the buzzard family at this game to come up twice near the same spot, unaccountably emerging from opposite sides of the pool in succession, and bobbing again by the time its adversary reached each place, so that at length the hawk gave up the contest and flew away, a satanic moodiness being almost perceptible in the motion of its wings. The young lady now looked around her for the first time, and began to perceive that as he had run a long distance very much further than as he had originally intended to come. Her eyes had been so long fixed upon the hawk, as it soared against the bright and mottled field of sky, that on regarding the heather and plain again it was as if as he had returned to a half-forgotten region after an absence, and the whole prospect was darkened to one uniform shade of approaching night. She began at once to retrace her steps, but having been indiscriminately wheeling round the pond to get a good view of the performance, and having followed no path thither, she found the proper direction of her journey to be a matter of some uncertainty. "Surely," apostrophe she said to herself, "I faced the north at starting." And yet on walking now with her back, where her face had been set, she did not approach any marks on the horizon which might seem to signify the town. Thus dubiously, but with little real concern, she walked until the evening light began to turn to dusk, and the shadows to darkness. Presently in front of her Ethelberta saw a white spot in the shade, and it proved to be in some way attached to the head of a man who was coming towards her out of a slight depression in the ground. It was as yet too early in the evening to be afraid, but it was too late to be altogether courageous. And with balanced sensations Ethelberta kept her eye sharply upon him as he rose by degrees into view. The peculiar arrangement of his hat and pugri soon struck her as being that as he had casually noticed on a peg in one of the rooms of the Red Lion, apostrophe, and when he came close she saw that his arms diminished to a peculiar smallness at their junction with his shoulders, like those of a doll, which was explained by their being girt round at that point with the straps of a knapsack that he carried behind him. Encouraged by the probability that he, like herself, was staying or had been staying at the Red Lion, apostrophe, she said, "Can you tell me if this is the way back to Anglebury?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "It is one way, but the nearest is in this direction," apostrophe, said the tourist, the same who had been criticized by the two old men. At hearing him speak, all the delicate activities in the young lady's person stood still. She stopped like a clock. When she could again fence with the perception which had caused all this, she breathed. Apostrophe, "Mr. Julian. Apostrophe, apostrophe," she exclaimed. The words were uttered in a way which would have told anybody in a moment that here lay something connected with the light of other days. "Ah, Mrs. Peterwin. Yes, I am Mr. Julian, though that can matter very little, I should think, after all these years, and what has passed." Apostrophe, apostrophe, no remark was returned to this rugged reply, and he continued unconcernedly, "Shall I put you in the path that is just here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you please. Apostrophe, apostrophe, come with me then." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she walked in silence at his heels, not a word passing between them all the way. The only noises which came from the two were the brushing of her dress, and his gaiters against the heather, or the smart rap of a stray flint against his boot. They had now reached a little knoll, and he turned abruptly. "That is Anglebury, just where you see those lights. The path down there is the one you must follow. It leads round the hill yonder and directly into the town." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Thank you, apostrophe," she murmured, and found that he had never removed his eyes from her since speaking, keeping them fixed with mathematical exactness upon one point in her face. She moved a little to go on her way, he moved a little less to go on his. "Good night, apostrophe," said Mr. Julian. The moment, upon the very face of it, was critical, and yet it was one of those which have to wait for a future, before they acquire a definite character as good or bad. Thus much would have been obvious to any outsider. It may have been doubly so to Ethelberta, for she gave back more than as he had got, replying, "Goodbye if you are going to say no more." Apostrophe, apostrophe, then instruct Mr. Julian. "What can I say? You are nothing to me. Dot dot dot, I could forgive a woman doing anything for spite, except marrying for spite." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the connection of that with our present meeting does not appear, unless it refers to what you have done. It does not refer to me. Apostrophe, I am not married. You are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she did not contradict him, as she might have done. "Christopher, apostrophe," she said at last, "this is how it is. You knew too much of me to respect me, and too little to pity me. A half knowledge of another's life mostly does injustice to the life half known." Apostrophe, apostrophe, then since circumstances forbid my knowing you more, I must do my best to know you less, and elevate my opinion of your nature by forgetting what it consists in. Apostrophe, he said in a voice from which all feeling was polished away. If I did not know that bitterness had more to do with those words than judgment, I should be bitter too. You never knew half about me. You only knew me as a governess. You little think what my beginnings were. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have guessed. I have many times told myself that your early life was superior to your position when I first met you. I think I may say without presumption that I recognize a lady by birth when I see her, even under reverses of an extreme kind. And certainly there is this to be said, that the fact of having been bred in a wealthy home does slightly redeem an attempt to attain to such a one again. Ethelberta smiled a smile of many meanings. However, we are wasting words, he resumed cheerfully. It is better for us to part as we met, and continue to be the strangers that we have become to each other. I owe you an apology for having been betrayed into more feeling than I had a right to show, and let us part friends. Good night, Mrs. Peterwin, and success to you. We may meet again, someday, I hope. Good night, she said, extending her hand. He touched it, turned about, and in a short time nothing remained of him but quick regular brushings against the heather in the deep broad shadow of the moor. Ethelberta slowly moved on in the direction that he had pointed out. This meeting had surprised her in several ways. First, there was the conjuncture itself, but more than that was the fact that he had not parted from her with any of the tragic resentment that as he had from time to time imagined for that scene if it ever occurred. Yet there was really nothing wonderful in this. It is part of the generous nature of a bachelor to be not indisposed to forgive a portionless sweetheart who, by marrying elsewhere, has deprived him of the bliss of being obliged to marry her himself. Ethelberta would have been disappointed quite had there not been a comforting development of exasperation in the middle part of his talk, but after all it formed a poor substitute for the loving hatred as he had expected. When she reached the hotel, the lamp over the door showed a face a little flushed, but the agitation which at first had possessed her was gone to a mere nothing. In the hall she met a slender woman wearing a silk dress of that peculiar black which in sunlight proclaims itself to have once seen better days as a brown, and days even better than those as a lavender, green, or blue. Menlove, said the lady, did you notice, if any gentleman observed, and followed me when I left the hotel, to go for a walk this evening? The lady's maid, thus suddenly pulled up in a night forage after lovers, put a hand to her forehead to show that there was no mistake about her having begun to meditate on receiving orders to that effect, and said at last, "You once told me, ma'am, if you recollect, that when you were dressed, I was not to go staring out of the window after you, as if you were a doll I had just manufactured and sent round for sale." Yes, so I did. So I didn't see if anybody followed you this evening. Then did you hear any gentleman arrive here by the late train last night? Oh no, ma'am, how could I? Said Mrs. Menlove, an exclamation which was more apposite than her mistress suspected, considering that the speaker, after retiring from duty, had slipped down her dark skirt to reveal a light, puffed, and festooned one, put on a hat and feather, together with several pennyweights of metal in the form of rings, brooches, and earrings all in a time, whilst one could count 100, and enjoyed half an hour of prime courtship by an honorable young waiter of the town, who had proved constant as the magnet to the pole for the space of the day and a half that as he had known him. Going at once upstairs, Ethelberta ran down the passage, and after some hesitation softly opened the door of the sitting room in the best suite of apartments that the inn could boast of. In this room sat an elderly lady writing by the light of two candles with green shades. Well knowing, as it seemed, who the intruder was, she continued her occupation, and her visitor advanced and stood beside the table. The old lady wore her spectacles low down her cheek, her glance being depressed to about the slope of her straight white nose in order to look through them. Her mouth was pursed up to almost a youthful shape as she formed the letters with her pen, and a slight move of the lip accompanied every downstroke. There were two large antique rings on her forefinger, against which the quill rubbed in moving backwards and forwards, thereby causing a secondary noise rivaling the primary one of the nib upon the paper. "Mama," said the younger lady, "here I am at last." apostrophe, a writer's mind in the midst of a sentence, being like a ship at sea, knowing no rest or comfort till safely piloted into the harbor of a full stop. Lady Peterwin just replied with what? Apostrophe in an occupied tone, not rising to interrogation. After signing her name to the letter, she raised her eyes. Why, how late you are, Ethelberta, and how heated you look. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said. I have been quite alarmed about you. What do you say has happened? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the great, chief, and altogether eclipsing thing that had happened was the accidental meeting with an old lover whom he had once quarreled with, and Ethelberta's honesty would have delivered the tidings at once, had not, unfortunately, all the rest of her attributes been dead against that act, for the old lady's sake even more than for her own. I saw a great cruel bird chasing a harmless duck. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she exclaimed innocently. And I ran after to see what the end of it would be much further than I had any idea of going. However, the duck came to a pond, and in running round it to see the end of the fight, I could not remember which way I had come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mercy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her mother-in-law, lifting her large eyelids, heavy as window shutters, and spreading out her fingers like the horns of a snail. You might have sunk up to your knees, and got lost in that swampy place such a time of night too. What a tomboy you are! And how did you find your way home after all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, some man showed me the way, and then I had no difficulty, and after that I came along leisurely. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I thought you had been running all the way. You look so warm. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is a warm evening. Dot, 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 yes, and I have been thinking of old times as I walked along, apostrophe, she said, and how people's positions in life alter. Have I not heard you say that, while I was at Bonn, at school, some family that we had known had their household broken up when the father died, and that the children went away you didn't know where? Apostrophe, apostrophe, do you mean the Julians? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, that was the name. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, of course you know it was the Julians. Young Julian had a day or two's fancy for you one summer, had he not? Just after you came to us, at the same time, or just before it, that my poor boy and you. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.